Welcome to Karate in the Garage. I'm Corey Cope.
I'm Freddie Wolf.
Kickstart 415 2024. Three April kickstarts.
That's correct.
How do we get here so fast?
Well, you know, it's, it happens when you're hurtling toward death. It just gets faster and faster and faster.
Speaking of hurtling towards death, do you know Coachella was this weekend?
Yeah.
And No Doubt had a reunion performance that was fucking incredible. Obviously, I didn't go, but thankfully the Coachella folks are so good about streaming multiple stages that are all simultaneously happening throughout the entire weekend. And I don't know about the second weekend if they ever cover it, but if they do, keep an eye out for it on YouTube. I didn't specify. But they were incredible. They were so good, and it was a perfect set because it was
short.
It felt too short.
I mean, I'm not a fan, so I mean, I don't know. They're a band that I marginally listened to when they were on the radio.
Yeah, they had a
kind
great
of candy
set.
Ass for me, like for what they were doing. I'm just saying, being honest, I'm glad that the show was good, and you know, I think I would be excited for like one song maybe.
But what was good was that they went for some deep cuts, like stuff that they before they got big, the stuff that was really ska heavy stuff. And then what was awesome is they made lease of the show too, and they just had a lot of energy, which was incredible to see because everybody's in their 50s, so it's a little bit of an adjustment, right? But they were probably just as energized as anybody throughout the whole weekend, no matter age, and they put on a fucking great show. And like I said,
they should be. They've been resting up for fucking 20 years.
Well, no, they played together 9 years ago.
Okay, they've been rested up for 9 years. I hope they would put on a good show.
And that sells the point even more, though, is how good they were. And this is probably better than they were in the reunion tour that they did when they got back together and did another record 13 years ago.
I will say the last time I saw them was probably 1995. They opened for Pennywise at the Palace. And it was before Tragic Kingdom, and they were pretty awesome. Gwen did a really badass version of Heartbreaker, Pat Benatar song, and then she fucking dove into the fucking crowd, stage dived, and fucking was passed around while she sang, and it was pretty exciting. And then they became the Tragic Kingdom band.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I liked them when they were a little more punk rock, a little less poppy, sad, you know,
right. Well, that's
don't
the thing.
Speak bullshit.
They did some deep cut stuff from the self-titled album, which is super punk ska heavy. And they did like two songs from that. And then they did a couple of covers. They did while Gwen was having her wardrobe change.
Her hair done.
Yeah. The band went out on the catwalk and did One Step Beyond, the Prince Buster song that Madness covered on their One Step Beyond album, surprisingly called.
Called One Step Beyond.
But they were incredible. It was a great show. And it was funny because they played in such a way that you would have thought that they still hadn't stopped playing together. And it was neat. It was a good show because usually those kind of reunions are kind of fall flat, but they came out full force and just fucking, it rang true. It didn't feel like, oh, they threw a bunch of money at us and here we are kind of thing. I mean, I'm not saying
that's what happened, but it's
what happened, yes. But it didn't feel like
Let's not get it twisted. They're not out there for we're going to play Coachella for the people, man.
And that's why I'm specifying.
The paycheck, man.
It's like that bone-throwing thing. Gwen doesn't need the money, but everybody else does.
I mean, maybe they do. I don't know. I mean, depending on when they stopped getting songwriting, you know, when they stopped writing songs and they all became Gwen songs.
Yeah. Anyway, it was fun because I felt like the last, when they got back together and they did the last record and they toured, it felt more like, it didn't feel like a No Doubt record. It felt more like a Gwen Stefani record that was less poppy. It was more, had more guitars in it. It was that kind of thing. I shouldn't say less poppy, but just different genre.
Had more instruments in it.
How dare you?
Less tracks.
So it was, it was solid though. I'm glad, and the crowd clearly was into it. And at one point they had Olivia Rodrigo, who was kind of like the fascination right now in pop music. And she's actually pretty good in her own right, considering how really young kid.
I had no idea who was. I saw the clips. I was like, who's singing with him? Like, I thought they pulled somebody out of the crowd.
And Olivia, there's a couple of times during the song because they did Bathwater together. And I really felt like she was like, she channeled Gwen a bunch of times, not just the way she was dressed, but she like said certain things a certain way that just like, she knows their music, you could tell, which I thought was cool. Anyway, I'm not big into going to festivals even when I was at that age.
You know, I've been to Coachella twice and that, but it's been 16, 17 years probably. Yeah. Yeah. I have no desire to go anymore.
They make it super easy now for me not have to go. I get to sit at home, listen to it. I mean, granted, it's decent stereo sound and multi-cameras and it was nice. There's some other EDM artists I watched last night after I watched that set because they went really late, like really late, which I thought was kind of cool, which is the benefit of being out in the desert, right?
Sure. Nobody to complain.
No one's going to complain, especially when you're on your much.
You don't live in the Hollywood Hills. You're not surrounded by houses at the bowl. 10 o'clock, the show's over.
Or worse, dude, the Greek.
Oh, yeah.
The Greek. I mean, as soon as one of the things I hate about seeing shows of the Greek or they announce a show, and as soon as you saw that there was more than one up being an actor, you're like, fuck. Because you know that the headliner is going to get shut down with a shorter set than they want.
It's funny you should mention the Greek because I was going to talk about, I went and saw the Black Crowes on Friday night at the Greek.
Oh, right.
And yeah, the show ended early. So yeah, that was fun. But yeah, I mean, the desert, that is the best thing about it, is you can play all night if you wish.
Right.
But dude, it must have been fucking terribly fucking cold out this weekend. That must have sucked.
Yeah.
Standing in the fucking, because it looked like it got pretty chilly out there. And, you know, of course it was sunny and beautiful all week. And then as soon as the music starts, here comes the rain again.
Yeah. What the what, man?
What the fuck, man? It's about to start raining. I think it's raining right now as we record. Yeah.
Hey, so since you mentioned Black Crowes, they got a sweet opening gig.
Yes, they did. They're going to be opening for Aerosmith. If you like Aerosmith, they're going to be touring.
Dude, it's like,
they opened for Aerosmith back on their first tour.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was cool. Like, here's Aerosmith at the end. And obviously they were handpicked because of the time that Aerosmith was basically on the beginnings of their upturn of, you know, their second wind, if you want to call it that. The Crowes have always, I don't think anybody that's listening to the show from the beginning has ever missed or how much love we have for that band, but it, not Aerosmith, but Black
Crowes. Right.
Specify. Because if you haven't listened to the show long enough to know this, then you would be like, what the hell? Aerosmith, really, Corey? I'm like, no. Black Crowes have always been not just amazing songwriters, but just the volatility between the brothers has always made such a fun live show because you never know what they're going to get when they're together, even though they've apparently mended the fence.
Mended the fence.
Their second album to me is like, I like the first album a lot, but the second album is just.
Yeah, dude, the second one is I like them all, but dude, the second one is the best one.
It's incredible. And it's like, you, not only do they not fall into the sophomore slump, they just like went, no, we're not doing any of that. watch this. I felt the same way about Stone Temple Pilots. Their second record, Purple, is so much better than Core. Like, so much better. Yeah,
it's like a different band almost.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty wild. But no, I'm excited for. There's a lot younger of a group of people that are going to go see Aerosmith because, like, oh, it's the last tour for real. Because they're not, you know, they're not going to do that whole thing that Kiss did for 20 years. And so, we're not doing this anymore. And then they keep going forever.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's fucking, they're 40 years in. Who would have fucking thought?
No. And considering even when they were together before the split, the likelihood of them getting back together other than like maybe a charity event or something was pretty slim, but long term, because they've been back together, what now, 5 years, 4 years?
What is it? They got back together in...
They reconnected during lockdown.
I think right before the lockdown, maybe 2019. Yeah. But yes.
Yeah. I've been wanting to see them. I haven't seen them since they supported the Southern album, probably. Shit, what year was that? 92.
When the album came out? 91.
92. I think 92 is when I saw them. Just trying to think about when it was that I saw. Yeah, 92-ish. Somewhere around there. No, they're amazing to see live. And don't confuse them with the Black Keys, which are great, but they're just totally different.
They're not the same band.
They're not the same band. Even though there's guys that you think are brothers, but they're not.
Yeah, the new record. Have you listened? The new record's good too, by the way.
No, dude, it's so good. It came out last Friday? Friday before. It's really good. They have everybody knows that I talk about the stupid surround mixing, but the Atmos mix for that record is one of those ones that bums me out because it sounds so good in Atmos with your headphones. And then as soon as you get in your car, it's like you don't hear everything because there's little, what the hell? Hey, man, turn off your phone.
That's not my phone. It was my alarm came on. Set to the Black Crowes Remedy.
When the alarm came off in the episode last week, I'm like, fuck it, I'm not cutting that out. Because we were saying things.
I know, right. We were in the middle of it, and it just kind of went, I was like trying to find it to shut it off.
So stupid. I can mute it out. I mean, on my side.
Silence my phone. I just silenced it.
Irma phone. Oh, shit. So Blu-rays this week. Okay, I think it's funny because we had a brief conversation about the rewatchability of comedies and Kino's dropping Fletch and Fletch Lives this week, which I thought was kind of funny that you'd...
Fletch I can watch. Fletch 2 I could never really watch, and I haven't tried to watch it, but I'm sure I couldn't get through it. I mean, no. I feel like it's not a... I think there's two, like we talked about this, I think there's two schools of comedies, and the ones that are easily rewatchable are ones that, you know, are they're a mixed genre. They're a comedy, whatever, like Fletch is a detective thing. But like, if you're trying to watch like sight gag things, like The Naked Gun,
right?
It's better to talk about it with your friends than it is to actually watch it at this point for me. I mean, and usually that's the case most of the time. Right after I watch it, I enjoy it. But then you try to go back and watch it and, it's like the cat's out of the bag.
But what I find interesting, and I think we mentioned it during the episode, but Scary Movie fits in that sight gag spoofy kind of thing that we're talking about. But unlike when we try to do the Golden Girls thing, which is all like sight gags because... The show's comedy comes from the reactions of the other women to the other performers. So when you can't translate that to an audio only podcast, it doesn't work. And that's the same reason why a lot of sight gag movies wouldn't work for review of the show. But somehow Scary Movie 2 works in the way a normal movie works, which is for the context of us talking about it. I mean, we did. We had a long-ass episode.
There's exceptions to every rule. Like I said, I could watch Airplane and Airplane 2.
Right.
Over and over. We could cover Airplane. We could talk about Airplane. I mean, Scary Movie 2 was easy to talk about because I think it's because it's, it literally cherry picks so many pieces. You know, we can talk about what they're doing and how it relates to the movie they're taken from, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, and that's kind of it's funny you say that because for this Gerard Butler month, almost all the movies that we're talking about this month, with exception of one, has that thing where they've cherry-picked from a whole bunch of other familiar things.
Yes.
And as we talked about, and Gamer dropped last week, Unlock Law Abiding Citizen, and it's an upcoming episode this week. It kind of misses the mark, and they took take the wrong ingredients. they didn't know what they were making either. So it shows.
Yeah,
but like you noted, like when it comes to sight gag movies, they can still work, but can they work in the confines of talking about it afterwards? I mean, other than going to House of Pies and getting some peach cobbler and talking about a movie afterwards, that's not the same thing. This is a I think one of the reasons why Airplane and Top Secret, I think the reason why they resonate with so much is just because of our age. And for me anyway, how I enjoyed Airplane more and more each viewing is as I got older and I started seeing all the smaller little things that they put in the movie that I was aware of.
Totally.
That I saw, but I eventually saw where they came from. I saw the movie where they took it from. And I was like, oh shit. And I had like, I mean, I'm literally watching a movie that, that they took the smallest little thing from, and then it clicked. I'm like, oh shit, that is from, that's what they put in Airplane. It's, that's what's fun about that movie in particular. And Top Secret's the same way.
Also, there's just so much going on in the background. Like,
yeah, more so in Top Secret too.
I just watched Airplane 2 the other night for like, you know, the millionth time. But I think what it is I haven't watched it nearly as much as I've ever seen the first Airplane, right, even though I've seen it a lot. But I just noticed two new things when I was watching it the other night. And I was like, God damn, this movie just makes me laugh so hard. I don't know, you know, it's pretty reviled by people for some reason.
But that's what's funny about it is like, yeah, none of the original people are involved in it as far as the creators, the Zuckers and Abrams.
The Zazz boys.
Yeah, it still worked. And it's like in a different way. It was most of the time when those movies are to get shoved out there without the original folks involved, it falters. And it's, you know, because it's a group of people trying to be somebody else in a very distinct voice that nobody can attain because they're not those people.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what's funny about it is there comes a point in the scary movie yes, universe where the Zazz guys take over scary right, movie and they suck.
And then they're terrible.
They're fucking the worst ones with a bunch. So, you know, it all comes around.
It does a serious pivot because then all the faces that are part of that world, like from the Naked Gun world, there they all are. And it's like, it's an adjustment. It's hard to kind of get through. That's the point because Charlie Sheen comes in at that point. And I mean, it has its moments, but like we talked about, when you're taking moments from other places and making a movie, yeah, a movie is going to have its moments because you're literally pulling semi-relative things to the story you're telling because you're really building on it's a greatest hits thing and you're figuring out a story around the greatest hits that and that's basically what it is. The difference is that with Airplane, Top Secret, the original Airplane, actually to a lesser extent the sequel, even though the same guys are involved in it, the irony is that with the scary movie sequels when they took over are more like that, you know, snake eating its tail thing. Now
I mean, that's a franchise that went on.
They're trying to be Wayans Brothers now, which is super weird.
Right. Well, it is. It's exactly because they're not really doing what they do. They're trying to do. I don't know, man. It's weird. Yeah. Let's just talk about that Blu-ray that we that you've. Because I still have a. I still can't even believe it's a real thing.
Oh yeah. Okay. So talking about Elite. I mean, I didn't want to break our conversation, but
no,
yeah,
I didn't either. But
it's all related to like. Okay, so there's a half-baked sequel called Half-Baked Totally High. Nobody from the original movie is involved in it. And apparently it's got a date of 2023, but it's hitting Blu-ray on Tuesday. So who
knows? Harlan Williams seems to be the only person from the first movie who's in it.
Oh, is it Harlan's listed in it?
Yeah.
Is he really?
Yeah. He's fourth on the, if you look at IMDb.
Oh, I'm just looking at the rundown.
Yeah, he is in it. So like Harlan Williams apparently is the, oh, and maybe Rachel True, was she in the first one?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't remember because it's like I said, that is a movie that I barely remember. Oh, she was in Half-Baked. So she was Mary Jane in Half-Baked. So there's two people, but
she's actually on the cover. I see her. Yeah.
But what a weird cast this is, dude.
But this feels like when Half-Baked became a hit on home video, this feels like this should have been made back then.
Yeah, like 2004. Or no, when Half-Baked came out in 98. So this should have been like 2000, 2001.
And that's when we were starting to see those DVD sequels.
Sure.
But it's, you know, Universal Studios, they're not really big on doing that. That's a Warner Brothers thing. They're always knocking off those Dukes of Hazzard straight to video things. But I don't know. I'm just surprised that it wasn't. Anyway, it's super weird. Oh, and Frankie Muniz is in it, too.
Yeah, I was just going to say, dude, where's he been, Malcolm? Where have you been, Malcolm?
Because at that point.
Race car driving.
He hadn't even done fucking Me and Spot yet when the original Half-Baked came out.
My dog Skip?
That, too.
He's not in C-Spot Run.
That's a different movie altogether.
Are you trying to mash those movies together?
No, I didn't. Because I don't give a fuck enough to remember. Because it's Frankie Muniz. Am I supposed to?
Dude, My Dog Skip is a horribly sad movie.
No, I know. Any dog movie like that's fucked up. I hate that shit. Assholes.
Frankie Muniz, good Lord. What, was he making spy movie? Cody Banks at that point? Like when he could have done this back in the day?
No, was he old enough yet?
Yeah, I mean, he was doing, I mean, in 2002 or 2003, right? When I don't know. I mean, again, I only know him from TV. I never saw Cody Banks or any of those things that he was in. Agent Cody Banks, that was 2003. Yeah,
well, Malcolm in the Middle was 2000, so.
Yeah, so My Dog Skip as well. Well, there you go. Big Fat Liar, starring.
I like Big Fat Liar.
Never seen it.
But the problem is, if we start talking about Big Fat Liar, then we're leading into the whole conversation about that piece of shit, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, that clown wrote that.
Fuck.
Where have we? You know, we've trapped ourselves. Good Lord.
Shit. Who did that?
Half Baked 2.
Half Baked sequel fucked us all up.
Half Baked 2 is ruining things already.
God.
Man, get that on Blu-ray. People are probably dying for it, I'm sure.
This is a really weak week, so to speak.
This poster is like the worst thing I've ever seen.
For the Frat Baked?
The Totally High?
And poor David Koechner. Why is he so scrounger for money now?
I don't know, but he's holding it all.
Yeah, he is.
In the poster.
Well, I bet he's the drug distributor. See, there's no reason why a movie like this doesn't work anymore. Weed's legal.
Weed's legal, I know. Yeah. Boo. I'm just going to say, never going to see it.
No. I don't even care if it pops up on fucking one like Peacock or something.
It's
going
to be on Tubi very quickly, dude.
That's the kind of movie
that goes directly to Tubi.
No, they'll pair it up with the original one. Like, oh, watch these together on Peacock.
I don't know. I think the first one probably wants to keep its distance.
Peacock. No, God. And the Jack Ryan series that's on Amazon Prime is getting a full box set. You can get individual episodes, but it got a bunch of flavors, 4K. And the reason why you're wondering, like, hey, like I thought that was an Amazon Prime. Well, Amazon Prime is the streamer for it, but it is a Paramount produced thing. What have we talked about recently? Paramount loves optical disc these days. So
this seems that they do.
So yeah, so simultaneously releasing all of these John Krasinski driven Jack Ryan movie episodes of TV. How many seasons that running around? 5 years? Something like that.
Oh, I don't know. It's like it's the third or fourth, I think.
So they have a lot. And then they're also simultaneously re-releasing the box set of movies of the whole Jack Ryan series, the five movies.
No. Oh, yeah, it's funny. Like I'm sure I've only seen the first three. I don't, maybe, which one is with Affleck? Some of All Fears?
Some of All Fears. But I think, yeah, isn't it Morgan Freeman?
It's Morgan Freeman and Ben Affleck.
Right.
Yeah.
And the last standalone was the one with Pine, right? Shadow Recruit or something like that?
Didn't see that one. That's with Costner and Pine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I got two big holes there, but I did read Some of All Fears. So I just picture it with Harrison Ford when I read it. One of them I can never watch again because I just can't watch Alec Baldwin. I tried to watch it not long ago and I was like, I turned it off. I'd rather watch Crimson Tide.
I think what's hurt for me, I mean, even before the incident on Rust.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm with you.
It's hard to watch him in roles like that. I struggle through Miami Blues, and everybody knows that what a massive movie
dude,
that
that's
is
like
for both
thing.
Of us.
You love, yeah. I mean, that's a thing.
But because of Jack on 30 Rock, I can't take him seriously anymore.
That was my big problem with Red October. Because I hadn't tried to watch it in, I don't know, 10 years, but the last time I tried to watch it before this, all I could see was Jack Donaghy from 30 Rock.
Yeah. It's hard to get past it because the way he plays that is the way he plays Jack Ryan.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, it's an identical performance and it's hard to kind of get through.
Yes. Yeah, it's the same. I tried to watch Beetlejuice, same thing.
And it was interesting is with that five movie set, they have three different aspect ratios. They got 240, 235, and 239.
What's your favorite of those movies?
Of the five?
Of the five. I mean, I haven't seen two of them, so I can only say of the three.
I've only seen one, two, three. Well, shit, dude. Maybe I've only seen the first three. I can't recall chuckling at Ben Affleck playing Jack Ryan, so I must not have seen it. Because I would have remembered that.
Right. I know that I didn't see it for sure. And it wasn't because of Ben Affleck being in it. It just, I think, by the time it came out, I was kind of like, I had already sort of moved on from that Jack Ryan stuff. I mean, I really kind of only, my dad dug that stuff. Like, he loved Tom Clancy novels, the whole deal. But yeah, so I just never saw it. I never thought it was going to continue to become a thing. Like, I didn't realize we were going to get a TV series, which I've never seen, by the way. But the movies, I have to say, I used to think, well, again, Red October, it's funny because it's kind of put itself, I can't say that it's my favorite. If I had to pick one to watch, I usually would pick probably Clear and Present Danger, oddly enough, which I kind of thought was the worst one. When I saw it the first time, I was like, oh, this movie's just so fucking.
I mean, the irony is that when they announced the second movie and I'm like, and they didn't have Alec Baldwin, I remember the time being like, dude, fuck Harrison Ford, man. I don't want to see him.
He's great in Patriot Games, dude.
No, I know, but I'm just making a joke. It's like, that's the irony. It's like going, I don't, as much as I revere Harrison Ford, especially at that time when he was doing some really good work, it's funny that I'm saying that now when Alec Baldwin's the reason I have a problem with Red October. I can't watch it.
Well,
there's so many clever things that McTiernan does in the movie, and it's just frustrating that the Alec Baldwin, that's my problem, really, because I'm the one that got the problem with who he is now as a performer. I can't watch it.
Well, it's funny because I feel like in that first one, Jack Ryan's not even the main focus in the movie. Mm-hmm.
He's not.
And what's weird about that movie is when I try to watch it, not only is it hard for me to, at the time it wasn't, but in subsequent viewings over the last fucking 35, 40 years, whatever it has been, 30 years, 34 years, Connery's accent, dude, is just so unbelievable to me. It's like they didn't even address it, which is probably best, but it kind of always made it, like, to me, it was a Sean Connery movie first.
Yes.
And a Tom Clancy international spy movie second.
Well, I mean, look at the cover of the this release. I mean,
who's that face?
His head is twice the size
of the submarine.
Yeah.
I mean, you forget all the other people who are in it, like Scott Glenn, and I mean,
Sam
it's
Neill.
It's not a bad movie. It's just
And one of the things I love about it so much is that one of the criticisms of movies like this, where you're intermixing languages, it's this thing where you go back and forth, the subtitles in English, vice versa, whatever the movie, wherever the movie comes from. But the push in while someone's speaking Russian on the mouth and then it switches to English and they pull back out, easily one of my top 10 favorite moments that John McTiernan's ever put in a movie. And I thought that was so fucking clever. But then now you have to, can you imagine though? But just, I don't know. I agree with you. Connery's like, when Connery's just speaking English, he's just Sean Connery playing this part. And it's,
oddly enough, it's kind of like when Harrison Ford had his crack at it in K-19.
Yes.
A few, you know, like 10 years later, where he's literally just sounds like Han Solo.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make the movies bad because I actually enjoy K-19 too. I mean, I'm a big submarine movie fan. Like, you know, I feel like it's, if you can make an entertaining movie in a space like that, you know, there's a talent to that. You know, and Red October is a good movie. I'm not saying it's not, but it's hard for me to like distance those two for those two reasons now.
Right. Right.
And I love Connery. But,
no, but yeah.
It's like, you know, like we talked a couple weeks ago with the movie with him and Justin Hoffman and Matthew Broderick. It's a stretch.
Right. I don't know what I was doing. And it was maybe it was talking about Connery and just somebody was doing a piece on him or whatever. And they had this one shot, though, like once they get to Newfoundland and it's nighttime and Alec Baldwin and Sean Connery is standing, there's, you know, they've come to the surface and they're sitting there, just kind of looking at the land and looking out. It's just I don't want to say it's a sweet moment, but it's that moment that's been building up to it. It's a great shot. I wish the rest of the movie was as poignant as that moment, because I just feel like there's a lot of, whatever Crimson Tide gets right, you know, and to where you can still watch it over and over again, this is just where it falters. But I think it's more of who those performers are to us.
Yeah.
That affect our overall enjoyment of the movie. It's not, totally. Again, it's not bad. And now the supporting cast is fucking killer. So it's like,
yeah. It's just, you know, it's funny. Like, I don't know that I would purchase a box set with all five of those movies.
No.
Because I feel like I could watch them kind of anytime I want. And, you know, they're movies I don't want to watch until I just kind of like, yeah, you know, if I come across it, if it shows up and it's, you know, I'll flip them on. Like I just watched Patriot Games. Oh, fuck. I don't know. 6 months ago during the strike. Cause you know, like, what am I going to watch today? Oh, let's look at Patriot Games. And yeah, Patriot Games holds up. There's a lot of good performances in that, but it's funny because those movies definitely turned into another, they became Jack Ryan centric starting with Patriot Games.
Right.
Right. Like, and they moved in a different direction. Like, there's no drawn out, like they're straightforward sort of action movies as opposed to The Red October, which is kind of more of like a sort of think tank, you know, chess game.
Yeah.
You know, different style. I can't speak on some Fall Fears or Shadow, whatever, because I never saw them. So I don't know if they stayed that way. I'm assuming they did. I don't know what the series is like. I hear it's good. I just have never gotten around to it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of money in it, and it doesn't feel like it's shortchanged at all. It's pretty solid. I haven't watched the last two seasons, though, because it's a lot to take. Here's the thing like with a lot of shows. I know, I've said it before. It depends on what the show is, but when you drop every episode at one time, you're basically not telling me, you're demanding I watch all the episodes at one time.
Right, well, there's 30 episodes, apparently.
Yeah, and, well, even when... Each episode is so dense.
Yeah, I bet.
It's hard to get through at all. And you feel, I mean, when you watch two episodes, it feels like a movie because it is a movie's worth of stuff. It's a lot going on. Well,
it's done now though, right? I mean, the final season already happened.
This is the complete series. This box says a complete series. So,
groovy.
Even though this is out there, I don't think. It's going anywhere. I think it's going to stick around on Amazon as long as it needs to. I don't think we're going to see it pop up on Paramount Plus anytime soon. So go figure.
Amazon figure. It is. You'll get commercials with it now.
Hey, so Vidiots, they did a couple of one-off editions last week, and one of them has been added since. You sent me that link to the one, which is now sold out, Phantom of the Paradise on May 5th. Ugh.
Yeah.
It's like Peter Ebling and Paul Williams making an appearance to talk up the movie on its 50th anniversary screening.
Enos himself.
It was so funny. When you sent me the link, I'm like, what did I say to you? I'm like, I can't believe this isn't sold out yet.
No, you said fucking Sunday. That's all you said.
Oh, no. Oh, what was I thinking of that wasn't sold out? Oh, it was War of the Roses. That's what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
War of the Roses. I couldn't believe it. But the Wednesday after that, on May 8th, they added a movie that you worked on, Drive.
Yeah, I saw that.
And this one's going to be another special guest attendance situation. How do you say Aaron's name? Is Aaron Benach?
Aaron Benach.
Benach. Yeah, the costume designer is going to be there talking about the movie.
Married to Ken Sang.
Director, oh, right.
DP Ken Sang.
I forgot.
Yeah, man.
Now I sound like a dipshit for saying her name wrong because I know better. Ah, there you go. That's going to be rad. That one's going to sell out, I think.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, that's it's a LA-centric movie.
Yeah.
It was kind of filmed over in, you know, parts of that, you know, in that area, you know, or takes place over, you know, if it's not sold out already, it's got to be sold out, I would imagine.
And I mean, I think I've asked this on the show before, because we keep putting Drive on our fan commentary thing because you do work on it. So we've been talking about it since day one, I think. What sucks is that just recently, the Saga Speedway that you see in and that they're test driving the car on, it had been shut down for a while. They took down the bleachers. So
those bleachers were a death trap. Even when we shot there, dude, they were condemned. Yeah. We couldn't, it took an act of God to even, I think Albert Brooks, is he actually sitting on them? There was a lot of contentious, back and forth about, you know, what we were allowed to do. And, you know, because they were not in good shape. I think construction had to shore some sections up, and yeah, it was dangerous. It was a little dangerous.
Well, yeah. Well, cause it's been doing swap meet since the Speedway shut down. Actually, it was always been a swap meet, but now it's a multi-day swap meet, and that's ceased now because they sold the property.
Right.
And apparently they're building like apartments or some shit there. Yeah, which is ridiculous because if you know where it's at, it's literally right next
right to the train. Yeah, man. Good luck living there. And it's also right behind it up in the hills. There is the Burmite fucking munitions fucking factory that's, you know, there's still like, you know, unfired. You know, there's reasons you can't go up there. Who would want to live that close to that shit on the train? I don't know. You've been warned.
Yeah. It's like, I don't even like going to that fucking Walmart over there because it's literally like you can throw a rock at the place from Walmart.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's weird. They built that police substation right there on the other side of it. Sheriff substation rather. But yeah, man, get out and see Drive. Aaron's great, dude.
That should be a fun one.
She'll have a lot of cool shit to say. I mean, there's, you know, one of the things that jumps out at you when I watch the movie now is the costumes in that film. Not just Ryan in his scorpion jacket. But,
right. How many people were wearing that that first Halloween that this movie came out?
Yeah.
And it's not just that, too. I mean, the way Perlman and Brooks are dressed, the way they have them dressed is so, like... It's so great. I mean, I love this movie a lot, and I just think it's pretty funny. It's aging well too. I was concerned that the 80s-esque soundtrack which is really pretty damn good. All the pop music they have in is really good. I was worried that it was going to age it, even though I still like that music a lot. But no, I think it works really well.
The Cliff Martinez score.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's very, it's like Drive or any of the, I mean, I feel like that it's going to kind of end up being like a timeless, you know what I mean?
Right. I remember at Beyond Fest, it was a double bill with this and Driver. And I hated it to bail on it because I was sick and I couldn't go. And I couldn't even get rid of my tickets. A sold out thing where Walter Hills are talking and I fucking couldn't sell it. I couldn't give the tickets away.
Right.
Yeah. And which is just the idea that's so absurd now. Anyway, that was 2007. Yeah, 2007. Yeah, and then there was another time I think they did Baby Driver and Driver together.
Oh, it couldn't have been 2007 because the movie didn't come out till 2010.
Yeah, that's what it 11. Was. That's what it was. It wasn't Drive, but Drive got double billed with Driver with some other point along the way, but it wasn't the same event. See, it I'm
was,
tired.
No, I think it was at the New Beverly, possibly.
Right, possibly, yeah. Oh, because you know what? I think Edgar Wright was there too. Okay, that's right. It was. I think it was Walter Hill and Edgar. It didn't really matter. It was. I missed it.
You missed it.
Couldn't go.
Couldn't give the tickets away because everybody was busy.
Is there something else you want to say? Because
I would like to say that starting this week is the American Cinematheque has started the Martha Coolidge retrospective, which. You know, I'm a giant fan. I know you are too of Martha Coolidge. Next Sunday is goddamn Sundays. They are screening Valley Girl and Real Genius, which everyone knows is one of my fucking favorite movies of all time. Comedy or damned. But she is actually going to be there, Martha Coolidge, with her own personal print of Real Genius.
Wow.
And doing a Q&A for both films. During the retrospect, they're showing Angie, Lost in Yonkers, Rambling Rose, introducing Dorothy Dandridge. Martha Coolidge, who's directed more cool movies than you can remember.
Yep.
So that starts, and if you can get out to that next Sunday at the Arrow, starting at, what time does that start? Looks like it starts at 7.
Real Genius is at 7.
Yeah, so 7. Martha with her own print of Real Genius. It's not going to get much better than that.
Yeah, that Rambling Rose and Dorothy Dandridge, that's going to be a rough evening too.
Yeah.
And she's actually doing that one. She's doing a Q&A
for
that one.
Doing a Q&A for that as well. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think Angie maybe is playing at the LF3. Again, we just talked about Gina Davis. It's funny. How it's the 30th anniversary and 35 millimeter print as well, courtesy of Martha Coolidge. So there you have it, man. That'll be a good one. Angie's a movie. Again, it's another tough watch, man. Good Lord.
It is.
Yeah, but it's one of my favorite Gina Davis movies.
Remember we mentioned how much she was kind of a chameleon with her stuff, and that this is, again, this is that what we were talking about. She does movies like this, and you think, on its surface, it kind of looks like, wait, is this a Gloria movie? Is this Gloria?
Yeah, absolutely.
The way they have her done up, that's what I thought, too. And then once you see, you're like, oh, fuck, this isn't that thing at all.
No, it's not. So
no, and she's tremendous in it. Like, duh.
Yeah. So if you have a chance, get out and see some of those Martha Coolidge films in the next week or so. If you live here, over the next 2 weeks, I guess, if you live here in Los Angeles and you're looking for something to go see that you might not be familiar with, outside of her work on Valley Girl and Real Genius, she's directed several movies that'll they'll turn your head, make you think, scratch it.
Groovy. Hey, so if you want to follow us on the socials. I mean, if you want to do that right now while the world's burning.
Yeah, man. It's like Planet of the Apes. The apes woke up this morning and went, fuck, there goes the planet.
Yeah. You follow us at Karate Pod on Twitter, Insta, and
Letterboxd. What? It's true.
No, I'm just, hold on. And then, you can follow me at Culper97 on Instagram and Corey_Culp. On Letterboxd. And if you want to support the show on Patreon, get those movie episodes early, you can do that at patreon.com/karatepod.
If you'd like to follow me, you can follow me at rockandroll33 on your Instagram, or you could follow me at Steve McCroskey at Letterboxd. It's Steve McCroskey at Letterboxd, or you could follow me at The Real John Ladd at Blue Sky. That's The Real John Ladd, bluesky.com.